Time to talk footy. Conversation starter for the all-new Kia Carnival, Australia's first GUV. So you join us too. You can have a you can join in the conversation at any time, 1300 736 736.
And off the Tempertex, good morning, Gary and Tim. Excellent work on the chairs last night. Gary, great pickup on Tommy McCartan on the mark. I didn't see this. This is from Joel. What did Tommy McCartan do on the
mark? Love Tommy McCartan, but he got outmarked by Cale Hooker in the goal square. Cale went back to have his shot, and then Tom just stood there with his hands on his hips.
Mm-hmm.
No putting his arms up. No putting your hands up in the mark. Cale Hooker's, he's a very even money bet. You can't do that, Tim. I don't care what you're doing. You stand the mark, hands up, you work it. Not good enough.
That's excellent work. Gee whiz. Oh, must have been a...
He's trying to do stuff that, you know, every other person doesn't do. There's a lot of copycatting going on in this industry. You run with a lot of stuff. Just take it and rebadge it.
I do want to run with a lot
of
stuff.
You do rebadge a lot of the stuff.
I do want to run with a lot of stuff that you had on the chairs last night. One thing is, and we talked about this very early in the piece about the, you know, the game trends and where they're at 3 weeks ago. It is startling how they've changed in the space of 3 weeks. What have you got for me this morning? I know you had this on the couch last night, but what is it?
Well, we've been – how excited has everyone been about the way the footy's been played?
Yeah.
So I think almost universal.
Free the Sheram, we've been saying.
So the stated aim was to move the ball from one end to the other, which was unbelievable early in the piece. So in round one, it was going from the defensive 50 to the inside 50, 27% of the time, which is a really good result. It's now down to 17. Right? So it's dropped significantly. The percentage of scoring from the back half was at 42% back in round one. It's down to 36.
Yep.
And then the stoppages, which everyone said, well, the best thing about the game is that it's moving, you know, freely. And there's there was on average 49 stoppages in round one. It's up to 60.
Right.
So all of these are back to like almost around the 2020. The numbers on the weekend were almost back to 2020. So there was always going to be a natural correction, wasn't there? What's your eye telling you? Did you see on the weekend?
My eye's still telling me that it slowed down a bit, but I'm still enjoying the game.
I agree with that.
Maybe it went too far the other way and it was freeing up too much and it's come back a bit. I don't know whether it's found its rightful or natural or the next level that we're going to have to get used to. But I said yesterday, Steve Hocking, pre-season, you know, when we're talking about this and we'd only sort of seen the practice games, and I said to him, okay, what do you think? Mm-hmm. It looks great. He said, yeah, but there'll be a reaction from the coaches at some point. Yeah. Okay, so I think that's what we're seeing now.
Yeah. Well,
Then they'll have to pull. This is what's going to happen, though, Gary. They're going to pull another lever because if they get bogged down again and they don't get the game that they think is allowing the ball to flow, then they'll pull another lever.
Yeah. Well, I think I think they'd be pretty happy with the way it's going at the moment. And they'll be monitoring all those numbers that we're seeing there. But I spoke to some of the coaching staffs of teams over the weekend as well, and they in their own mind said, we as a club or we as in the industry got that excited about having that kick available to us. We just took it without thinking.
Yeah.
And then we took the next one and then the next one, and that's why it was zinging.
Mm.
And then on reflection, they look back and said, well, that's not always the best thing because it wears us out, doesn't give us protection in the back half. You know, the turnover numbers were huge, so they just – I think started to go a little bit slower, which I think the correction was always going to be there.
And if you talk about that West Coast Eagles St Kilda game, they got down by 33 points. Mm. They ended up winning by 20. So there's a 53-point turnaround.
Yeah.
And it also meant that if you want to take it, you can. At some stage in the game, if you've got to speed it up and take the game on, then you can.
Yeah.
And it's open to you to be able to do that.
Even more so because of rotation.
Yes.
Because the rotations are down, so players are getting tighter, and then as the game wears on, the last quarter comes in. If it's there and it's on and you want to back yourself, then you can go. There's almost a rope-a-dope mentality if you wanted to.
Yeah. Can we just revisit? I really loved your analogy. I know all jokes aside, but I really loved your analogy about where the Bulldogs' defence is at the moment. We'll play the extended version.
I'll paraphrase it.
No, it just goes
too long.
Okay, all right. This is the... What the Bulldogs are doing now, because they've got such a strong and powerful midfield, you're saying it's really protecting their back half.
So when you talk about the Dogs, you go, where's the weakness? They're on top of the ladder undefeated. You go, well, their midfield's probably the best in the comp.
I think it's deeper than anyone else's.
So their forward line now with English and Norton and Bruce and the complementary players is... it's proved to be better than adequate. So then you go, oh, maybe the back half is the problem. Gardner gets injured. What they've done.
Actually, Young stepped up last week and was very, very good.
Yeah. And Luke Beveridge, he's not worried about it, by the way. But they, these are all champion data stats. So they had a look at it, and they've had the fewest one-on-one. So they've been able to play in such a manner that they're able to get back and help out, or their midfield is so good it protects them. Mm. But they've had 38 one-on-one contests, right? This is as a collective back group. Carlton and the Gold Coast Suns have been involved in 91. Mm. So there's your comparison.
Mm.
But of those one-on-ones, they've won the fewest.
Right.
So I guess what I'm saying is...
So if you can isolate them, yes, you can get a one-on-one, you've got a good chance of maybe being able to do better than just halve the contest.
Yeah, 38% they're losing. So all I'm saying is, so the analogy was thick, voluminous hair thinning at the back.
Right.
And when you're thinning it back, you don't want to draw attention to it, so you do the comb over a bit. So they're not drawing attention to it. I reckon Luke Beveridge is probably not that fussed with it, but they are numbers where you look at and go, okay, can we get them in a one-on-one?
Mm-hmm.
And if we can, our chances statistically are pretty good.
Your best chance of doing that is to win the centre bounce clearance, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and they've got the best centre bounce. Oh, well, they've got the best clearance team in the competition. So that was just a little take.
No, yeah. I liked it. I liked it. I'm not sure that Maury out there in Williamstown enjoyed it quite as much. He has a comb over. Good morning to you, Maury.
Yeah, g'day, Gary. I've got a bone to pick with you, young fella.
What's up, Maury?
Well, I've got a comb over, and I'm a Bulldogs supporter. Now, that comb over, just like KB, has served me very well indeed. I've been married 3 times, so you could say I've been to the big dance 3 times. I've got 5 kids, and there's nothing wrong with a comb over, and I think the Bulldogs will go to the big dance as well, Gary.
Hey, I love your work, Maury, this morning. I absolutely love your work, and they could. You can make of all these what you will. I was just trying to assess where they're at. They're in ripping nick. They're in great form, and they are on top of the ladder. And you just, I don't know when they're going to win the next couple, I would think going forward.
Collingwood were a big talking point last night, obviously, across all the football programs. Where did you get with your conversation? I see that Tommy Morris actually raised the idea that there may have been some disgruntled players in the ranks there. Is that wrong?
Yeah, he did. I haven't spoken to Tom about that. He came on and did that report. He was pretty strong, actually. He went really strong. Said they're, I don't know, paraphrase, but they're in disarray or something like that. I'll find the actual. But he also questioned the relationship between Bucks and the players and whether it was, you know, he said...
That's a serious accusation to say that, though.
When he's talking about relationship, he said that they're growing weary of the emphasis on the emotional connection message.
What does that mean?
Well, exactly. What does that mean? Well, I would imagine that, you know, there comes a time some players want tougher love, for instance.
It's, right.
You know, you talk about, you know, let's do this and let's have empathy and let's, you know, show your feelings, all that, which is great. But then you know that there are some times where players in clubs go, righto, how about giving us this and give us some harder direction? Mm. I'm just paraphrasing. But the same old problems exist. We spoke about this yesterday for Collingwood. We went away and had a good look at some of the stuff that they're doing. And
structurally, are they doing anything wrong, do you think?
Oh, well.
In the study of the way they're playing, what does it say?
It's the inability to score and convert opportunities.
And that's been sort of like a two-season problem.
And that's the frustration. And they had one period against Carlton, I think, where they sort of addressed it to a degree where they were hitting up leads. And clearly GWS looked at that and went to work. And you could see the vision last night that they pushed numbers back. So that got taken away from them. And then it was a bit, okay, what do we do now? So I think everyone in the footy world, and Bucks flagged this after the game, is looking forward to seeing what sort of change comes.
Are you one of those advocating a positional change for Darcy Moore? This is what Matthew Lloyd had to say on Footy Classified last night about sending Darcy Moore forward.
Talk about their forward line, Darcy Moore or Jeremy Howe.
It's time to let the genie out of the bottle with Darcy.
Does he have the courage to give up something in his defence to gain something in his attack?
Would you do it?
I would. I would at least release one of them. I'm not sure which one it is because they're both stars of the competition in the defence. But for the sake of the team and winning games of football,
Moore's the one
of them
Moore's
has to
the
go.
One, isn't he?
Probably because of his size.
He could ruck as well.
Yeah.
Well, you were a key centre-half back and a key centre-half forward. Do you think that they should do something like that?
I've been singing for this for a while, but I don't know if it's this week's the time to do it. Kennedy, Darling, Allen, Waterman. I don't know whether you want to be taking Darcy Moore from your back six this week.
That would be brave.
Well, it could be brave or stupid against this particular forward line. Mm. Like on other occasions, I've been really strongly advocating for it because I think you cut your cloth depending on who you've got. And if your matchup is there and, you know, the Crisp can handle it and Roughhead can handle it and Howe can handle it, my criticism has only been, well, there's your opportunity. I've watched Collingwood games sometimes and they're down by 5 goals halfway through the third quarter. The matchup forwards seem to be throw. That's when I would love to see them throw forward. So I don't think they've been adventurous. Other people would say, well, that's one of their strengths is that they, you know, they're predictable to each other. I would like to see a bit more dare and a bit more adventure and in their game style. But I don't know whether taking Darcy away this weekend against West Coast over there is going to be on the radar.
Hawthorn coach Alistair Clarkson, he was on 360 last night and he was asked a question about whether or not he was there and prepared to see the third rebuild. This is what he had to say.
I trust the history. It's been 17 years. Trust the history. Loyalty's pretty strong, both at Hawthorn and me. I'm excited for it and I'll do it for as long as the club and I see fit that we're making progress.
Well, do we think they're making progress at the moment?
Well, they're in transition, aren't they?
Mm.
They're not, they're
it's a difficult period for them because they are in that transition period and sometimes the graph doesn't always just go in the one direction. I mean, sometimes it just levels out. Sometimes it goes down again. Sometimes you go back up again. But I think that what they're doing at the moment is that they're still proving to be a really difficult team to play against. What they need is you need superstar talent. You go back through, you know, all the teams that have won flags, you know, in the last 20, 50, throughout the course of history, right? And you stack up their superstar talent. Doesn't matter how they got that superstar talent, how lucky they might have been, whether they recruited or whether or not they drafted it, whatever it might be, or they took it from other clubs, whatever it might be. You need superstar talent. They're light on superstar talent. So whatever they do in the rebuild here, they've got to get some more of that superstar talent into their football club. And the best way, probably it's the slowest way, though, is to go and draft kids and insert the kids into your team.
Yeah, they're not in the premiership window, are they?
No, they're not.
They're nowhere near it.
But they've got to build towards that, okay? And right now they probably haven't been able to get enough. Like, you go back and look at the building blocks of their last success were Hodge, Roughhead, Mitchell, Lewis, Buddy Franklin. Like, all kids that were taken.
Generational kids.
They're generational players, though. Mm. Like, they form the backbone of your club. Yeah. Right now they don't have that group of players in that quantity.
No, they don't. They got a Brownlow medalist in the midfield. They got O'Meara through the midfield. They got Will Day, who they think's going to be one of those superstars.
But we don't know yet.
Oh, I'll be pretty sure he's going to be pretty special. Jath, Denver Brass. So they're a long way. I mean, they're building and building. They're a long way back. But if he's up for the rebuild, then they couldn't be in better hands. From where I sit, if I was listening to that, thinking if I was a Hawthorn supporter, I'd be going, That makes me feel pretty good. Maybe, hey, if you're a Hawthorn fan out there, do you want Alistair Clarkson to continue or would you like to see a nice transition over to, say, a Sam Mitchell, who's coaching Box Hill this year and continuing his development? I'd be interested. I don't know what Hawthorn fans would say. So let's throw it open to the Hawks supporters. Let us know. Johnny Longmire, not far away. Mark Williams also to join us. He's introducing the all-new Kia Carnival GUV with an SUV-inspired design, spacious seating for all 8 passengers.
Kennards Hire is making trade easy with an express load and go service and heaps more. The country is back racing strong. Support local communities and visit country.racing.com.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Done some private research for you, Geoffrey Kennett and the Hawthorn chairman, Hawthorn board. 99% of Hawthorn supporters say, don't you dare let Alistair Clarkson go anywhere. So it's his decision. It'll ultimately be his decision and should be. And then this, in amongst these 340 messages that just came in, what should I get for dinner tonight? Was thinking a chicken stir fry.
That sounds all right to me.
Delicious.
Daniel's
don't
in Nary.
Don't use the coconut oil, though, because that's not the one that you should be using.
Daniel and Nary Warren. Go, Daniel.
G'day, boys. How are we going?
We're going well, thanks.
I'm going to throw a couple of names out. Kevin Sheedy and Norm Smith, successful coaches at their club. I'm a Hawk man. You don't throw the legends out just because you think you need change.
I haven't had one message so far from the hundreds coming in, Daniel, that would argue with you. So thanks for your call. Michael wants to talk quickly about Clarko and the Hawks as well. G'day, Mick.
Yeah, g'day, Gary. Look, massive fan of Clarko and it's a bit of a no-brainer, but with the soft cap these days, can you afford to pay him as one of the top coaches in the league to do a rebuild when you might need a lot of development for these younger players coming through?
Now, there's an interesting take. I like the lateral takes on it. I hadn't even thought about that.
What's more valuable? That's what you have to decide upon, don't you? Where do you spend your coin? Do you spend your coin on somebody that has been a genius, successful coach?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you think it's more important to have three coaches that can do the work of one Clarko?
Developing coaches. So Michael's asking, is there still the right coach for the stage of development that his players are in? I think he can do anything he wants in the end.
I think he's shown the capacity to pull people from different backgrounds into his coaching staff too and have them as valuable members of what it is that he's building.
You know, when Richmond still are the benchmark and that their very best winning premierships, their forward line group was just crazy, manic pressure at forward line. They had Jack Revolt and then eventually Tom Lynch, but there was just, I'm wondering whether Melbourne have adopted that and trying to replicate that as best they can. So right now, after four games, they've got six in the top 21 of forward pressure players in the comp. Six out of 21.
Six, not all four. Obviously, they're not all forwards. They're six.
I'll tell you.
There's six players in their team.
Yeah, who put the best forward line pressure on the comp. And they are Cozzy Pickett is at seven. Neil Bullen's 10. Spargo, who I've been talking about, is 14. Petrarca, when he plays there, puts pressure on. And Oliver, when he goes down. And Jack Viney's number two. So that's a good sign, isn't it?
That's a really good sign.
The pressure ratings are the third highest ever by a club since 2013. I'm just wondering whether teams obviously look at other successful sides and you want to replicate, but sometimes you can't because you haven't got the players that got that mentality. Maybe Melbourne have just got a group there that have either the pennies dropped or they've got their head around the fact that it's not a bad way to play.
No, it's a good way to play. And St Kilda, you look at how they got back into that game and where they really took control of that game. It was all on the back of some great forward line pressure from their small players.
Some do it naturally and happily. Dan Butler brought it to St Kilda.
Yes.
And then lost it.
He got it back again at the weekend.
Recaptured it again. He recaptured it during the game, Wisp, which is a pretty impressive feat.
Yeah. He could have kicked four goals.
He could have kicked it. How bad do you think Port Adelaide's how significant a loss? No, that's a stupid question. Butters and Dersma are huge losses.
Yes.
What impact will it have? Are they good enough to cover for them until they get back?
Unknown at this stage. They have built a strong list of players, though. They've got a good lot of depth. And we've seen this in the past. You have to find a way. Richmond over the years, even the premiership years, they've found a way during the year. Now, they have a good list of players, obviously, that they've put together. Port Adelaide, I think, believe that they've got a really strong list of players. It is just, we talk about superstar talent. And Butters has become a very, very good player in a quick space of time. Dersma too. I think Butters has actually gone ahead of Dersma in terms of a player. So you may not get the total replacement, but the collective has to then do that extra bit of work and you just got to find a way of getting through and qualifying, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, hold on. They've got some depth. I mean, Rockliffe's not getting a game in that team, so you would imagine he might get a look at some stage.
He doesn't replace what Dersma does, and replace what Butters does either. So you've got to shuffle your other pack around a bit too. It's a test, though. It's a constant test.
Of course it is. Back page Herald Sun, there's a suggestion the coaches are looking at, I don't know if they're putting this forward or they've spoken about the bye before the finals. Pushing that back to the bye after the prelim so that the two competing grand final teams have 2 weeks to prepare, but it also takes away the situation we're seeing with Chelsea Randall in the AFLW, is that the concussion now with the mandatory 12 days means that she's going to miss the grand final, which I think is heartbreaking, but fine. Only fine in as much as if you're going to be serious about something, then this is exactly when it gets tested. Would that be a better use of the bye?
I would like to see the bye just taken away completely. Taken away completely. Not have a bye at the end of the home and away, not have a bye during the final series.
Do you think there's merit in it before the grand final?
I think it's worth considering because now we've got different concussion protocols around. But how far do we go? to ensure that every player can play in a grand final.
The point is that there's a bye anyway. There is a bye.
Yeah.
Some people are suggesting it.
I'd like to see that taken away, though.
It doesn't do the teams that have, you know, qualified high and win their first final, doesn't do them an enormous justice because it means they only play potentially one game in 3 weeks.
I haven't really given it a lot of thought.
And I think if you look at, you know, so Brisbane and Port Adelaide both won. So had the bye. Brisbane, Port Adelaide both won that first final, did they not?
Mm.
Then they have another week off.
That's right.
Then they play again and both lost.
You know what? I
think that's right.
Yeah, I think that it loses the momentum.
Well, that doesn't sound right for those two teams who qualify high and win their first final and they only play once in 3 weeks.
No, I think that's a disadvantage to them.
Well, it shouldn't be a disadvantage.
No, it shouldn't be. That's why we should take that week away.
So then,
And then I don't like the idea of then pausing again and having a fortnight between the prelim final and the grand final.
It's not my idea. That idea is crap, Gaz. I'm just saying this is what's being floated by the coaches on the about this particular time. So give us your thoughts. 2 weeks off. Brownlow on Monday, bit of time to. This is a very much an American NFL situation.
They do it over there.
A 2 week build up. Anyway, it's worth talking about. How would you feel if your star player, your superstar player, gets the minor concussion and is going to miss the grand final? Whereas if he had the week off, he might be able to play. Give us your thoughts. In the meantime, let's get some news headlines with Meredith Gibbs. Welcome back, Johnny Longmire. Not too far away. Little bit of support for a pre grand final bye.
Where?
I've seen it.
See, Must be little. I can't see it.
I've got my glasses on. I said little. Means you get an uncompromised here. Bye before the finals. Good teams don't have to rest players in the final round. We get good Thursday, Friday, Saturday night finals instead of a final on a Sunday afternoon. That's from AG.
Okay, well, he supports it. Can I just change the subject?
Oh, very quickly, because Johnny Longmire.
I understand that, but just a quick one, okay? We know that Jarrod Harbrow, he bumped, and apparently he didn't bump, and then therefore there was nothing to see here. And then Cunnington gets a week for the bump on Laird.
Yep.
I don't think he touched his head. I don't think he knocked him any.
No, he did.
Well, did he?
Well, I watched it about 20 times. So.
I watched it many times, and I was still unconvinced.
Okay.
Is there any difference between those two? I'm happy. But if he chooses to bump, okay, and there's contact, Laird jumps straight back up, so there was no.
He ended up on the bench, Laird. But I looked at the Adelaide injury report, and there was no.
He's going to play this week, though.
Yeah. He wasn't on the injury report. I didn't ring. We checked with the AFL because I was a bit fired up about it as well. And the AFL claims that Harbrow and Gibbons was two players playing the ball. This is the explanation. Don't shoot the messenger. That Harbrow was playing the ball and that was an accidental head bump.
Now, no, I
watched that 30 times.
I disagree with that vehemently.
Well,